Welcome to the Lighter Side of the Dark Side. It's your weekly freak show here on Renegade Radio and all podcast catchers, iTunes, Spotify, YouTube as well. You know the deal. It's Dark Mark, the goth comedian, as always, everybody's favorite horror writer, Nicole Six.
Good evening.
Good evening, Nicole. And is it National Cat Day? Is that what's going on
it's
today?
International Cat Day. Trouble's having a cat nap right now, though.
Oh, good. Well, I'm glad. Glad your cat is having a cat nap. As I was telling you before when we had a false start for this show, you know, country music has never been bigger.
Yeah, it's pretty popular right now.
The top three songs of any type in the country right now are country songs. There's Try That in a Small Town, which I haven't heard, but I really am tired of the discourse on that. There's Last Night by Morgan Wallen, which you will be hearing because you're going to Vegas this week. And you'll hear that about 100 times. And also some guy, Luke Combs, does a version of the Tracy Chapman song, Fast Car. And that's a country song, supposedly. So that there's your number three songs. And hopefully soon rising up the charts is this guy. Charlie Renegade, thank you for hooking me up with this guy. What a fascinating story. It's got ups, it's got downs. And there's the triumphant comeback coming up. And he's got not just one, but two albums he's released this year, and he's looking for more. It's a great pleasure to have Uncle Rhino.
Thank you, thank you, thank you for having me, brother man.
Oh, it's great to have you. You have a fascinating story. I was going to start off the show by saying, Nicole, I got a big star coming on, Ryan Reynolds. And we do have Ryan Reynolds on. There you are, Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah, I'm the first one. I'm the first one. As you can see, I improved drastically by the time I turned into. I shouldn't make a Green Lantern joke. I should go straight to Deadpool, and right. Just keep it there. Yeah.
Well, you were telling me that you had the original RyanReynolds.com.
Correct. And my company, we sold it to the actor. At the time, they had come to me and they said, "Okay, so we're shutting this label down. Do you want to keep the domain?" And I'm like, this was during the infancy of the internet. And I said, nah, I mean, I'm not going to use it. I said, I'm not going to use it. What has the actor done? Does he have any movies I know? And they said, he's got one movie. And right. So they told me it was that movie Waiting.
Right.
It's basically Animal House meets Applebee's. Right. Mm-hmm. So me and my old roommate, he and I went, and this dates us. We went to Blockbuster and rented it, swung by and grabbed some beer and went back to educate ourselves. And I called them. After that one movie, and I was like, let's roll with it. Because, I mean, if this is going to be the pinnacle, we got to get in and get out while the getting's good. Right. And then he went on to do incredible, phenomenal things, did a great testament and tribute to our name. And I'm right. really proud of him for that. He's done everything I've seen about him. He's just a phenomenal human being. And not everybody can say that about another guy that has the same name. We actually have the same middle initial. His middle initial is Rodney and mine is Ray. So
Triple R.
Yeah, it's across the board.
Wow, I can't say that everybody has my name is great, but I will tell you, I got to match your energy because I know you're in Texas, you're in the middle of doing a lot of stuff, and I got to match your energy. So I'm going to drink this if I can get in the camera. There it is, Ray's energy drink. This is the best. Ray's energy drink. You can get these at GNC's or vitamin shops. Well, why pay full price? Get them on the description in the podcast catcher or on the YouTube link or on Renegade Radio and get 15% off a case. This is the best. And this is Baja Blast, which tastes like or Baja Lime that tastes like Baja Blast from Taco Bell. They have other great flavors like Juice Box, Fruit Punch. That's delicious. Get some Ray's energy drink. And the best part about it, zero carbs, zero calories, zero crash. Ray's energy drink. Now, Uncle Rhino, you grew up in East Texas, West Louisiana.
Yes, sir.
Now, I used to live in New Orleans, and I know that East Louisiana is a whole different thing.
Yes, sir. It's a different planet. A lot of people don't realize Northeast Texas, North Louisiana should be called East Texas, and Southeast Texas should be called Louisiana. Alligators don't really, they don't read the state line sign, so they crisscross with impunity, and so do the Cajuns. So right. You've got just about as many in Southeast Texas as you got in South and Central Louisiana.
Do you have any alligator stories growing up?
I have a few. We used to fish. We used to go fishing and catch them. You know what a piro is?
No.
It's a tiny little boat, right? That's a French word. The little boat, it's called a piro.
Right, I've seen those.
And me and a young man were on Toledo Bend, and we had been running stomp lines, which have the catfish are so big, the fishing line is parachute cord. We have to use, and we have to use alligator hooks, right? Mm-hmm. And this was in the spring, and there had been an issue where some people who were from not local had come down in the spring when you had hatchlings, and they didn't respect it. They just saw a cute little lizard and decided to chase it, and then they met mama and all that stuff, and it didn't turn into any kind of horrible ending to that story, but the word had gotten out that you had some near misses, right, on a gator attack type deal, but the people that actually provoked it. Me and a young man who were out running the stomp lines who were catching these big catfish, we were out in the boat, and we had seen several small alligators, and we started working ourselves up into a tizzy, right? And we started, you know how you get to talking back and forth, and you're trying to convince yourself. You're not trying to convince anybody else you're not scared. You're really trying to convince yourself you're not scared, right?
Right.
But we'd seen these other alligators. And my buddy and I, we're in this tiny little boat that's probably 4.5-5 feet long is all it is. And there's two of us in it. So that tells you that the water's right up to the lip. Mm-hmm. And he's pulling his the cord up. And all of a sudden, the cord gets real easy to pull up. And both of us are kind of leaning over at the time. And all we saw was about this much of pink coming at you.
Yes. Right?
And both of us, I think at some point, I'm not sure if he was on my shoulders or I was on his shoulders, but both of us were up on the end of that P-row. I think the P-row might even been up on our shoulders. I don't know. But we were brick stacked out there for just a minute. Somehow we didn't tip over, we didn't fall in, and obviously we did die. But it was just a big old catfish that was coming up with his mouth open. And to be quite honest, it's very possible that we more than likely scared the hell out of the catfish. I don't know that we were up in arms about it. I'm not entirely sure that we didn't traumatize the poor catfish.
Catfish, alligator, they're pretty similar. I can see how you can mistake that. Now,
well, it's the water's so dark, see, bayou. So the water's so dark, you can only see maybe 3 or 4 inches down into the water.
Right.
So all you saw is the hint of the color, and it was coming straight up at you. And all we saw was pink. So that's that moment in your life where you get right with Jesus, right?
Yeah, I'm sure.
Or try to make a damn fine showing of it.
Nicole, I don't know if you ever heard the Randy Travis song, Forever and Ever, Amen, the country song?
No, I haven't.
Well, it is a special song in Uncle Rhino's life, especially when he was 15 and then it came back around later. Tell her this story. I love this story.
Yeah, so, you get to, for me, my teenage years, I was falling in love with music. That's when we start making memories. And for the rest of our life, that song, whatever that song is for each of us, becomes the soundtrack to those memories. Mm-hmm. And I was just a crazy East Texas kid. And there was this real cute girl who, she was actually 15 and I was 16. And I had all these big ideas, everything I was going to do. And I'd be standing down there telling it to her in the driveway. And she loved country music. And there was a guy who had come out named Randy Travis, who is absolutely, he changed, he brought that music back to the old school. you know, country music, which is just as cool as rhythm and blues, just mm-hmm. as cool as all the other art forms. A lot of people don't give it, you know, seriousness, but that's the back that rock and roll was built on. That's that, you know, rhythm and blues and country. B.B. King said it better than anybody. The only difference is G chord, you know, and so it's the same. They're sisters, you know, mm-hmm. rhythm and blues and country music. They're sisters. And then and so much came from it. So, you know, to be able to show that respect is paying homage and respect to the ones who came before us in the roots. So all that being said, a guy named Randy Travis came out probably around 86. And he had a song called On the Other Hand, which was really cool. And it's really old school country. People went crazy over it because nobody was doing that at that time. So he was creating the format, right? He wasn't chasing it. He was coming out. He was making something old, new again. And then right behind that, he came out with a song called Forever and Ever Amen, which is really cool. And it's about a guy, you know, who he's telling this girl, you know, I'm going to love you forever, forever and ever, amen. As long as old men sit and talk about the weather, as long as old women sit and talk about old men. If you wonder how long I'll be faithful, I'll be happy to tell you again. I'm going to love you forever and ever, amen. And it's a simple little song, and it's easy to remember, but it's just three chords and the truth. You know, that's what made it so amazing. It was complicated simplicity. I see that now as a musician. But back then as a kid, it just spoke to me and a lot of people liked it. And the girl that I really liked, she loved it. So by God, I learned all the words. Mm-hmm. And I would stand out there on her mom and dad's driveway and I would sing it to her. And she would get those big eyes, and I'd be looking. I'd just keep on singing. As long as she keep looking at me like that, I'd just keep doing another verse. And that was way back then, about 36 years ago. And I took her on her first date, and being kids, after we went out a little bit, we kind of went different directions. We came back together in 97. We got married in 99. 24 years later, we're still hanging in there, and I still love her forever and ever again. The cool thing, I think what Mark's talking about is the cool thing about the connectivity was when I moved to Nashville, I didn't have any plans. I gave myself 18 months. I'm going to go up here and physically be there and see if I'm good enough. And in 14 months, I got signed to my first publishing. And the guy who signed me to my very first publishing deal is a guy named Don Schlitz, who wrote Forever and Ever, Amen.
Wow.
Yep. To me, I think there's a lot cool to that story. The one thing is, it's like the country equivalent of Say Anything, where the guy's with a boombox playing Peter Gabriel. You're out there singing to her. And yeah. And you're still together with her. That there's nothing cooler than that. But the fact that you got signed by the guy that wrote that song, that turns it into the cosmic. And so you just, now when did you realize that you could, you were not the karaoke quality, but professional quality, and you should try this for a living?
I lost a bet. I really did. I don't even remember what I would have won. I don't. A dear, dear friend of mine, Stephanie, she and I, she did a lot of singing at these local little talent shows that were a real big deal in the local community. Everybody, you did music because you loved it. You didn't do it because you were trying to make a career out of it. And to be quite honestly, there were so many people that were just so talented. I learned way back as a kid that the most talented singer, the most talented musicians, they're not on stage getting a Grammy. Those are the ones who are anointed and appointed. The most talented singer that ever existed is rocking her baby to sleep, singing her baby to sleep tonight. You know, the most talented guitar player who does it out of pure joy and love, it's not recognized by all the trade mags and all that stuff. That guy is working on a building a skyscraper or something somewhere. And when he's off, him and his buddies, you know, just let love come out, you know, and rock out on some little VFW stage somewhere. Just because you don't know their names doesn't make people, you know, mean that they're not epic. Right. And I had appreciation for just what we call it, porch picking. You know, everybody sitting up on the porch and you just get some good grooves going. You know, everybody's just sitting on that porch and you got like, dang, 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 dang.
I'm not even gonna try to hit that beat.
We'd just be killing it on the porches, right? And be rocking out. You know, right. Mama filling up the jug with some more tea. Well, the thing is, and Stephanie said I needed to be on one of the shows, and I don't remember what my reply was, but it probably made Jesus cry. It wasn't satisfactory, but I ended up, we made a bet, and if I lost, I had to go and audition. So I went and auditioned, and it was after the show one night. Everybody had left the auditorium. I had my back to where the crowd was sitting, and I got up there, and I did a version of old Tulsa Time, Don Williams' old Tulsa Time. And okay. Clapton back did a remake on it, right?
Okay.
And I did, and that's another thing. What Don Williams to Eric Clapton, that's the thing. Same thing with Luke Combs and Tracy Chapman. Okay, music's music. Light recognizes light. A good song can be played by anybody. A good song, that's a testament to the writer and the song, because Ray Charles said it, and he saw it better than anybody, and he was blind, and that's probably why he saw it better. Music's music, baby. There's no room for walls. A great song can pivot either way, right?
Yeah. Well, your stuff definitely crosses all genres.
I was just curious on what you think the best benefit of growing up in the South was and how it prepared you for your career.
Well, I watch TV a lot, like everybody else. Well, I just about quit now, but for a long time I did, and I kept hearing on TV about how we all hate each other. And I'm looking over at my black friends and black family, and they looking over at their white friends and their white family, and we wondering who's trying to get us. In the South, you don't really have black and white. You just have people with money and people that are poor. And people who are poor, they ain't got time to be racist. You know? So the way that we're all painted up that way is so false. You know, the old dirty South, everybody has got, we're all mixed. Our bloodline is all mixed. Everybody's got some Irish. Everybody's got some Latin. Everybody's got some Creole or something, you know, in the family tree, you know, and it's like, we don't look at the world that way. My daughter's Creole. Okay. Mm-hmm. My baby girl. My daughter, she looked more like Beyonce than she looks like me. We adopted my daughter.
Well, thank God.
Yeah, I know, right? I know. But
I'm kidding. I'm kidding, Uncle Rhino. But
oh Lord Jesus, I'm not. I'm so proud of her. But she when she gets pissed off about something, though, she sounds just like her daddy. I'll tell you that.
Right? I'll bet she does.
Yeah, but
so you learn tolerance in the South, which is showing how far the South has come, because obviously it wasn't always like that.
Well, and that's the thing. It's so crazy because I didn't run into a lot of things until I went North.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I saw crazy stuff from multiple different walks of life. You know, the same people who would treat me different just because they heard me speak. Anybody who will assume something, the word assume makes an ass out of you and me. It breaks into three small parts, ass mm-hmm. out of you and me. And that's right. The problem with people who always assume. And they're usually the smartest people in the room. And those people can't ever learn a thing, right?
Right.
And that's right. The deal, man. It's people down this way, we stop and visit with each other. We don't even have to know each other. I went to eat lunch today, went in a barbecue joint. I hemmed and hawed and cut up two or three folks on the way in there to go place my order. They didn't know me and I didn't know them. We were both laughing and smiling when we passed each other. They didn't look like me. I didn't look like them. But we both enjoyed each other's company on the flyby.
Well, I will tell you that.
That's how life's supposed to be everywhere.
Right. It really should. I will tell you, when I lived in New Orleans, I had a friend visit from Vegas, and he said, you know, people are much friendlier down there. And he's like, people are really friendly around here. So so that is something. So you went to Nashville. Now, this is funny because I want to get your your clarification on this, because I know, you know, you hit some really hardcore bars when you're coming up. Because we've all seen the Blues Brothers where they had chicken wire in front and people throwing their beer bottles. You actually did gigs like that.
Yeah, that was back in the day. Yeah, in East Texas, you still had places like that on Highway 80. And same thing in parts of Louisiana, parts of Mississippi, you know. They called them cut and shoot. You'd cut your way in and shoot your way out.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, you... But have you
ever been in danger?
Danger's a relative term. You know, I'm sure. Yes, I have, actually. Yes, I have. We had an incident in a bar. I was 19. I was playing. There was an altercation between an old man and a young man. By old, I mean, he was in his 40s. Young guy was in his 20s. It was a 20-year difference. Oh, it was over a female. They broke into a fight right in front of
sounds like LA.
Yeah, and you just keep playing. You keep playing. They got to have traveling music while they're whipping each other's ass. If you stop playing, everybody stops and turns and looks at the band, right? So we kept playing, and the bouncers finally showed up for work, and they hauled them out and called it a day. And that was a Friday night. And then the very next night, the older guy had gotten the worst end of it, right? The younger guy was on top, but it was kind of a sneak attack approach to how he started the fight anyway. So the older guy didn't really get to make a good showing. But sadly, unfortunately, the next night, Saturday night, it was a little after midnight, I think. And the older guy had come back into the same bar. And this time he was packing a pistol, and he had emptied it in the younger guy again on the dance floor right in front of the band.
Wow.
And it's that reality can happen. You know, I haven't seen anything like that since. But back in the day, I mean, and I think it was his wife, you know, type situation. So there's a whole lot to unpack there. You know,
right.
And I guess technically we were in danger. You're in danger every time you get behind the wheel and drive anywhere. I mean, danger's everywhere. So yeah, I don't really think about it.
Talk about a tough gig. Now you stop playing. You stop playing when there's you keep playing when there's a fight. Do you stop playing when there's a shooting?
We didn't.
You kept going?
We kept it going. Yeah, you kept it going. Yeah,
it's tough. It's weird because I've had fights break out during my set. I had two fights break out during a set once, but they actually stopped it after the first one, and the second one. Comedy's different from music. Music, you got to keep going. But what's the weirdest thing that somebody threw at you on stage? So, I know beer bottles, but what else?
I mean, they were pretty cool with us on the beer bottles. I mean, but when you're walking onto the stage and they you hear the crunching sound, you know, before you came on, they weren't that nice to somebody else.
Right. You better be good.
Back in the day when Travis Tritt had that song, Here's a Quarter, Call Someone Who Cares, everybody would throw quarters, and they meant well.
Ow.
But you got it. It was a butt shot. Yeah.
We really like the song. Bang. Yeah. Sure.
Yeah. I had a guitar that I would play. It was an old Ovation. It was one of my first acoustic guitars, an Ovation guitar.
Right.
And that one still looks like it got hit with birdshot, because that's the one I would play in those clubs in case of anything. And that one got kissed by many quarters.
I'll bet. So you pay your dues. You pay your dues in these clubs, and boy, did you have to pay dues. What is it like just going to Nashville, being a country singer and songwriter? How do you ingratiate yourself into the scene? How do you get noticed? How do you get ahead?
Well, I mean, it's like anything. You start networking. You know, you go out, you listen to some people play. They have showcases every night, everywhere, where people are just starving to be seen by somebody. You have what's called In the Round, where a bunch of writers are always playing the songs that they wrote, always original. And it's the In the Round setup is really cool because it's usually in the center of the club. Mm-hmm. And the writers are all sitting in a circle facing each other, and the crowd is sitting all around them. So all the writers are in the center, and these guys, they'll have little squeaky voices or whatever, and you don't recognize their face or anything. And they'll start talking about, you know, when I did this song or whatever, and we came up with the idea this way. And it's always funny because, like you were talking about, divine, you know, crazy cosmic stuff. I mean,
right.
These guys will lay it out right in front of you, and people will all be listening. And then they start playing the song and you're like, holy crap, that's one of my favorite songs. And it could be Jess Leary singing This Kiss, who's one of my old co-writing buddies. It could be Sharon Vaughn, who I used to write with. Sharon, her very first song she ever wrote in her whole life was My Heroes Have Always Been Cowboys. You know, the old Willie Nelson song.
Right.
Classic. You know, her very first song she ever wrote was that song.
Right. Well, I mean, Willie Nelson himself, I mean, back in the day, Crazy was like, he started as a songwriter.
Yes, 100%. And these guys, when they tell the story, it just brings the song. Especially if you already love the song, it takes it to a whole nother level because you get to see how it was born.
Right.
Right.
Where do you get your inspiration from? Like, how do you get the little itch to write?
It's everywhere. I mean, it's everywhere. So the hardest part for me is to try to force myself to dumb down sometimes and not chase every rabbit that runs in front of me.
Although you did chase the rabbit for Don't Fry Bacon Naked. I am assuming that's from personal experience.
No, it's not. No, it's not. It's 100% fiction.
Right.
Mostly fiction. But I took an exercise. I would do that a lot. I would take something that there's no way you can write a song about it. It's just not possible. A single word or something. And I'll stare at it until I find a way to turn it two or three times to give it different meanings. One meaning for a chorus, a meaning for the verses, maybe even a different context for two different verses. But I'll find a way to turn it. Because all I ever wanted to do once I got bit by the bug, I did love playing out. But once I really started writing, that became musically, that was my first love, was writing, producing, and composing.
Right.
And the only reason I played out as much as I did when I started playing out was because my best stuff never got attention. And I didn't realize that then. But I wasn't writing for what was on the radio right then. I was writing what I didn't hear on the radio right then. And throughout my entire career, the stuff I would write or the stuff we would produce would come into style 6 to 12 years later sometime in the modern sound of country music, before Colt Ford, before Big and Rich even, who I adore. I love those guys. Me and Kenny go back 30 years, 30.
Okay.
Yeah. 30 years. And, but Abel Kane was the project that I put together after I did it the Nashville way the first time.
Right. Tell me about the Nashville way and we'll get to Abel Kane and all that. But now you got your first success as a songwriter or a singer?
Well, it was kind of all hit at the same time. So I was working on a bridge crew. And I was gone too much. I didn't move to Nashville to be gone that much. So I came back, took a job in a foundry with blast furnaces and molten metal and acid and all this stuff. But I could work for 4 days and then be off the rest of the week. and I was working nights, so that gave me chunks during the day to be able to go and meet up with people and write for a few hours. And I met up really quickly. I don't remember how we initially made contact, but I ended up meeting the Mayer family, as in Brent Mayer and his son, Brian Mayer. And okay. Brent Mayer, he was the producer and the guy who discovered the Judds.
Right.
The country mother-daughter duo, the Judds. Why not?
Everybody knows the Judds, yeah.
Okay.
Well, even people that don't know country music like myself know the Judds.
All right. And I actually did my very first work tapes in their billiard room at their house. Brian set up a little four-track recorder, and me and my acoustic guitar sat over there, and I'd do a guitar vocal, and then I'd sing harmony to myself. And that was my work tapes that I would be able to show people. And I did that there at their house, just hanging out. And me and Brian wrote quite a bit together. And that continued all the way up to this last album, Trouble with a Bubble and Falling Up. Those two songs, Falling Up is like 26 years old. Me and Brian Mayer wrote that years and years ago. And my wife always loved it. When we were getting ready to go in, she found the guitar vocal of me playing, banging on the guitar, and Brian singing harmony to it. And we did Falling Up 20-something, like 26 years ago. And then the first time we ever recorded it was for this Uncle Rhino project on New West, Falling Up.
So you know, from the Foundry to the Judd's house, which I would imagine is a lot nicer.
It was way nicer. Yeah. It wasn't their house. It was the producer's house, Brent Mayer. But it was super nice. Their family is just an amazing family. Still is. Very, very good. Very close to me. I moved from there. I continue from there. As you meet each group of people, you meet another cluster of people. And you connect with different ones. So it's networking. And eventually, I had a meeting scheduled. I would get leads because as I would write with Brian, his publisher, who he wrote for, would speak on my behalf and set up an appointment to another publisher. And I would go talk to them, and either they would be potentially interested in signing me or they would want me to write with their writers. Well, at the time, I was brand new in town, and I had all these people wanting me to write with their writers. But nobody was jumping. And then the day that I went to Hayes Street Music, that all changed. And I got my first publishing deal. And shortly thereafter, probably about 8 months after that, I got my very first song cut on an independent artist named Rich McCready, who was on Magnatone Records, which was produced by Brent and Brian Mayer.
There you go. Yeah, now, were you going by Ryan Reynolds, or did you have a stage name? Or
it was Ryan Reynolds. I was the only one at that time.
Right, there was no Deadpool running around Ryan Reynolds. No. But you got signed to a label. You had some big songwriting success. You had a couple of songs that were top independent country songs.
Yeah, well, that initially before I got my record deal. I got my first record deal not long after my cut with Rich McCready. And that was on it was a small label, a boutique label, but it had major distribution. And so for the listeners, that's basically, it's a powerhouse little boutique label. It's got a small roster, but it had deep pockets. And so that was great. And that was kind of what I was looking for, because that would be a great way to segue into being the whatever they called the singer-songwriter type thing, right?
So, did your wife ever inspire any of your writing?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, especially now, because I have so much more to work with at my age. You know, I understand the emotion so much better. I appreciate the memories that matter, and the ones that don't get to stick, you know? And there's beauty in being 50 years old. You know, there's amazing beauty in that, and there's power and there's strength in it. You know, when I was in my 20s, I felt everything first. And at my age now, I've mastered my own mind. And so by doing that, I control my emotions. They definitely are one of the key components that remind us that we're alive. But right. My mind is what's in control.
Right.
And all the experiences that I've had throughout my journey, I can use all of that and I can apply that, not just with my wife might inspire something, but all the different amazing people that we met, my grandparents that raised me from the age of 13 on to adulthood, you know, that was my role model right there. They stayed married for 63 years.
That's incredible.
And the day that my grandfather left this world, that morning, he did what he always did. He would walk into the kitchen and my grandmother would either be at the stove or rinsing out a cup at the sink or something. And he would walk up right behind her. He'd kiss her right on the neck or on the shoulder. And he would say, "Good morning, baby." And he would say that in his 80s. And right. that was
I tried that with Nicole. She doesn't like it. But we're not going out and we're not married. So that's probably why.
I call my wife that. My wife inherited the baby, you know, that phrase. And I told her when we were dating, I would always refer to her as baby. And it became a nickname, and all of our friends and everybody would call her baby. And all of that actually originated from my grandparents. And that's what was my grandfather used to call my grandmother.
So did your wife inspire a super freakalicious?
Sexy freakalicious.
Sexy freakalicious, I'm sorry.
Absolutely. And that one, and Amazed by Your Heart. Right. And the biggest one, the one that's got the real meat on the bone, so to speak, and the one that is kind of our part of our story, is Weight of the World.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's, I always had to be the guy to carry not only the band and everybody who was counting on me. I always carried that, but I thought I always had to carry her. And when the business was imploding for me, coming out of the 90s, going into early 2000, when I was having all these issues and transitioning from being the Nashville way to doing the underground way, because I saw so much on the inside when I did it conventional. I went through a lot of kind of revamping, rebranding, rebuilding, but I had her with me. And I realized the power, the incredible power in a woman that loves you. And she was a model, you know, and you would assume that they would be this way, but because that's about appearance and stature and build and everything. Dude, that's an East Texas girl. Mm-hmm. And she was like, "Man, if we just shared one bag of ramen noodles, she would have been good with it, as long as we were sharing."
Yeah, it's a great love story. And if you'd like to, men, if you want to have a great love story like that, you really need to be hygienic. And you really need tactical soap. Because if you want a sexy, freakalicious girl like Uncle Rhino has, get some tactical soap. This is pheromone-infused soap. They have three different flavors. They're three different smells: Bond, Durden, and Maverick. And they have three different types of each. Go to the description in the podcast catcher, or YouTube, or Renegade Radio, and get your tactical soap. And then you can get your own sexy, freakalicious girl that will fall in love with you because you smell so good.
So good.
Now, Uncle Rhino, now you were telling me on the phone, we were talking off air, how you got screwed over by the label. So let's do some because a lot of people think, okay, you get signed to a label, you're in, you're a millionaire, you're on the radio. That's not like that.
Yeah, they see you on TV and they think you're rich.
Right.
I'll never forget, I had a guy one time, I was going to a show and I'd thrown my suit jacket on and I had my hat on and everything, my cowboy hat, and I was flying down the road. And the guy pulls up to me at a red light, and he looks over and he starts freaking out. He's like, "I just saw you on CMT, blah, blah, blah." And I'm like, "Cool." I'm like, in the back of my mind, he was so impressed. I'm just me. But he was so impressed. And I was like, "Man, I probably should have asked him for about $5 for gas." You know, that was kind of the joke. You know? And but that's not the reality at all. It's the show business. Okay, it's not called for real business. It's called for show business.
Right.
So, got so many of these folks. I can't tell you how many people who have won Grammys and all this stuff, but every time you see them decked out like $1 million, they still got the tags in their clothes. Because when the event's over, they taking the clothes back.
Right.
You know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean.
And I'm from a culture where when I tell you I love you, man. I mean it. You know, when I'm mad at you, you know I'm mad at you, but we're going to get over it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And it's just real all the time. And that was a hard adjustment for me initially. I had all these people that came running. Before I got my record deal, Ken Offen was Big Kenny. A guy named Rory Lee, now he goes by Rory Feek. He had Rory and Rory plus Joey, Joey plus Rory. They had a duo for a long time. You had Leanne Womack, who was from back home. You had Billy Yates, who was phenomenal, who has he became a, just a legend songwriter. There were so many of us, and we would co-mingle back then before anybody knew who we were. And we found each other in that big old city. And we didn't make a name yet. And we would write with each other and all this stuff. And then one by one, every one of us started to pop off, right? And I got my first deal on Imprint. And at Imprint, I was just super stoked. We cut the album, brought in phenomenal people that I adored from the music business, had a great producer. We went for what's called ad date. You're familiar with it, where all the labels, the radio station might have four slots to play a new single. You know, they got four slots for four songs, but they every week they get hit with 60 singles.
Right.
Next week they're gonna get hit with 60 more, and so it's really difficult to get one of those slots. It might
especially
only be
especially if you're not a name.
Yes, for real, and so. My label went into overdrive and I told them because I came up from a no collar background at home. So you're not going to outwork me. I'll be the baton and I'll run all your promotions people to death. And they got them lined up and ready. I had one run in 26 days. I was in 47 cities and I was coming to see the radio people and everyone was super cool, super nice. I stayed in touch with many of them for years and years, program directors, everybody. And then came time for ad date. And I'm scared, you know, I'm nervous because this is kind of a do or die thing. And then the whole label goes crazy, all the promotions people, because in the whole United States, we came in number fourth.
Wow.
out of all these major acts who've got all these albums behind them and everything. I had one single. Nobody knew who I was. And I had two institutions, Alan Jackson and John Anderson, who were just huge and legends already.
Yeah.
And Wade Hayes, who was still so talented. And he had just come off that hit song, Old Enough to Know Better and Still Too Young to Care. That was a huge hit for him.
Mm-hmm.
And so he got... he got the third place slot. And then our song, Do I Ever Cross Your Mind, came in the fourth place slot with pledges from all the program directors and labels who did not add us to the next week. They were going to add us. So we were super stoked about that. And you feel like you're on cloud nine and everybody's wanting to celebrate. But
you're about to break. You're about to break.
Yeah. Yeah, 8 days later, that's when the president of the label calls me in and we have lunch. And he just cuts right to the chase. And they were real bad with all their money. And they're going to close the doors on the label. 8 days after we just rocked the country market, I was a guest host on Fanfare on CMT that year. I was on stage with Merle Haggard and Charlie Daniels and all these guys up there.
Fanfest is huge. Yeah, it was huge.
We were doing all of that. and my label just fell out from underneath. And my video that we released for it, that we filmed up in New York, was the hot shot video for 8 weeks after my label collapsed and they pulled the single. They were still spinning my video nonstop on CMT. And so I, being the guy that I was raised to always be, take ownership, I internalized a whole bunch of that. What could I have done different? What could I? Well, I didn't have anything to do with the checkbook for the label, right?
Right.
So my producer was an A&R guy at another label. So it's like, cool, we're going to keep it in the family. We're going to roll over there. Okay, not a big deal. So we head over there, and we having the meetings and the discussions, and then the next thing you know, you get word that the parent company, the parent label, is going to absorb that smaller label. So they're not telling anybody. Right?
Right.
So I jumped from there because I've tried to do this the way they've been directing me to, all the professionals.
Right.
Okay. We've been doing this for 30 something years, who ought to know something. And we're just chasing our own trailer hitch. So I turn right around and I say, you know what? I'm going to do a show. That's what I know how to do. And I went down to 12th and Porter that had two big 8-foot carved wooden angels hanging from the wall. It had a black ceiling, black walls, black floor. It was like a LA rock house type setup. It was really cool. And I went in there with my band, they were all beasts, roadies. And we went in there and we booked two shows for the week. We did one on Tuesday and we did one on Thursday. And we did them right at 6 o'clock. And the first show that we did on Tuesday, we only did 1 hour, like a showcase, in and out, right? The first show, we invited all the label, but all they had done was sent the interns and the minions that first show.
Oh, yeah, I know that. Well, I know that deal.
Yeah. So we rocked it out, had a blast. The whole upper deck was packed with Belmont University students screaming and raising hell. And that was a good vibe. But then we turn right around and come Thursday. I don't know if I told you this when we talked on the phone, but other than at the award shows, I have never in my life at a showcase, if not me personally, I have never seen 8 record presidents sitting in the same room that only seats about 350 people. I never saw that before, but they were there that night because the word got out after the first show. And on Friday, I had gotten, my manager had received an invite for us to go to the farm, the family farm of the president of Capitol Records. We had received that on Friday. He wanted me and my girlfriend at the time to go out there and hang out over the weekend, which we did. And it went so well, we ended up spending the night in one of the guest rooms and then had a big hang, did breakfast. Keith Urban was out there at the time because he was signed to the label at the time. And we just all kicked it, partied, and hung out. And then come Monday, an offer from Capitol Records hit my management, and they called, and it's on. And away we go. Lawyers, do your thing.
There you
and
go.
We were locking it
so
in.
So there you go. You made it.
Yeah, that's
and
it.
Then...
And then one of the top legendary acts they had over there felt like the other acts who were up and coming and had been given a lot of success, like Trace Adkins and Dina Carter with Strawberry Wine. There was a big push from this veteran artist that they had.
You're not going to say who it is. I know you keep tiptoeing around this.
Well, I mean,
this man who ruined your career, or this woman who ruined your career, or this group who ruined your career.
Yeah, they didn't ruin it. They gave me a blessing that I couldn't see. Mm-hmm. They gave me the greatest gift of my life, probably. Because I thought what I wanted was happening right then.
Right.
And years later, I know what really matters now. Mm-hmm. And that's not me convincing myself of a consolation prize. I know what really matters. I know what really makes you eternal and what really makes life epic.
And so you weren't ready at that time. You're ready now.
Yeah. Yeah. And that when that artist pulled in the owner of EMI to a show, everything he did was perfectly executed. And I was a big fan of the guy for years. I bought everything he put out. I loved his shows, everything. But at the end of the day, when he had the president of the record fired, and then all the heads of the departments went, and then all the acts that were on the drawing board, they go, i.e. this guy. And then the people who were just so successful, like Dana Carter selling 6 million albums, the very next album was only like 300 or 400,000. That was because they had stripped her entire marketing budget away from her, and people didn't even know the damn album was out.
Wow.
And redirected all that back to the guy who felt like he wasn't getting the right amount of attention. And that was very hard. And that's when I realized, you know, the whole saying about cream rising to the top, it'll only do that if they don't turn the jar.
Right. And to be clear, this was not Keith Urban. He's cool.
Oh, he's cool. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah,
cool. And by the way, if you go through some hardship and you want to relax, because you're just under stress because these things are happening, Nicole will tell you, get some Renegade CBD.
Oh, it's fantastic.
You get your bath bombs, get your gummies. Charlie knows how to relax you. We all go through stress. We all go through the times where we really need to chill. And that sounds like a high-pressure situation. Go to RenegadeCBD.com and get your Renegade CBD. You had a song, Cowboy Up, that became huge in Boston.
Yeah.
I didn't know Boston was such a country music market.
They turned into one. Yeah. And
I've never been to Boston, and they love country music, I guess, or they love Cowboy Up at least.
Well, what had happened was, so it's 1997. It was the year that my single on Imprint had come out. Mm-hmm. And we had a German label, a German independent label called Edel America, had come, had seen or heard some shows or something. And they came and wanted me to contribute a song to an unnamed, at this time, an unnamed album that they were doing with various artists that was going to be for the PRCA, the Pro Rodeo Cowboy Association. They wanted to make them an official soundtrack album for the rodeo. Right. And I didn't know much about it, but they had asked me if I had written any rodeo songs. And I said, absolutely. And I had written one my first year at Hay Street when I was writing for them. And it was called Cowboy Up. Exactly what it was talking about. It's talking about you using the metaphor of, you know, riding bulls, you know, bronc riding, whatever. But life beats you up, life throws you down. It's what makes us epic is how we get up, how we keep going, how we keep getting up. And that was really the whole concept of the song. And then later, they called me. I submitted it to them. They wanted me, and they loved it. They wanted me to record it. So we went into Warner Brothers studio and recorded it. There's a crowd section in the back with the whole crowd going. One of the amazing voices in the back chanting and singing along Cowboy Up is actually Big Kenny from Big and Rich.
Okay.
I bought all the pizza and beer. And we just had a bunch of friends hanging out. We laid it out. You know, it was great. And, we did it, submitted it. They called. They told me they were going to name the whole album Cowboy Up. So that was going to become the title track of the album. And some of the other artists just shocked me. It had Waylon Jennings on there. They had Johnny Cash. They had Emmylou Harris. They had Willie Nelson. And I was just floored and so honored. Kid from East Texas, you know.
Right.
Still not making any real solid money yet, but the whole purpose of me moving up there was to see if I was good enough. And I was starting to get kind of an answer. And so that's what I was working on. And then everything collapsed with my label. They wanted to release it as a single. And my label, since that I was under contract with, wouldn't allow that. And then my label collapsed. Okay, and so then it was too late to go back and have that released as a single on Edel America. So it was just, but like I said, all of this that went wrong was such a blessing. If all of this stuff had happened, I wouldn't have been married to my wife, and I would not have adopted my daughter. We would have, our paths would have never crossed.
Right.
Right. And that's it. That's the end all be all. That's why I'm doing music again, was for my girls. They right. love my music that I write. They want me to do it again. That's what inspired me. So, but what happened is crazy, because that was denied being able to be released as a single, right? Mm-hmm. And then organically, I get word that it's the anthem for several years in a row at the Calgary Stampede, which is the largest rodeo on the planet, right? Then I find out it's at the Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo. It's got to be like the second largest one on the planet. It's crazy. It's like something from the Bible, right?
It became the hugest rodeo song.
It got crazy. And then, and so you're from 97 when we cut it. And then I had some other success with some other songs and won some awards and stuff like that. And then I get this call from a co-writer freaking out, because my mother had actually been sick. That's when she had been diagnosed, right? So my mother had stage 4 cancer, and I had stepped away. I was no longer kind of in the world with everybody else. I was in a bubble. And I was kind of focused on some family stuff. And they had reached out and told me that this was happening. And they had been trying to get me to go play Boston. And I had politely declined. I said, I'm not doing that, but I really appreciate you thinking of me. And I'm super honored and everything. I didn't realize how big it had gotten. And then the next thing you know, I'm talking to my stepdad. And he says, you know, are you going to go to Boston? I said, man, we got other stuff going on. I don't have time for this. And it wasn't a confrontational thing, but he kind of stepped in and he said, well, I want to tell you this. He said, last night, because this was a Thursday, so last night would have been Wednesday night, I had been nominated for a SoCan Song of the Year again up in Canada, right? And he said, last night, your mom finished chemo. She came home, she took a bath, she put on her jammies, got some coffee, was all excited. She went in there, sat on the couch. She had a little stocking hat on. She's so excited watching that TV. And I said, cool, cool. And he said, yeah. He said, that girl came out singing your song. All those people in the crowd were singing all the words to it. She saw her baby boy's name go across the screen on that television. He said, for 50 minutes, your mama wasn't sick. For 50 minutes, she glowed. I said, so what do you tell them? He said, how many more times are we honestly going to be able to make your mama smile? He said, if I was you, I'd be taking my ass to Boston. So when I hung up with him, I got back on the telephone. I called the good folks up. I said, I'm down. New plan. I'm in. I said, I got one request. Kick the money. I don't care anything about the money. No, it's an honor just to be considered in all of this. But I tell you, if you can send a couple of plane tickets and have an extra wicked hotel room and transportation with a driver, we are all in. Next thing I know, they flying my mom and my stepdad up first class to Boston. When we were flying in, the pilot told us to look out the left side of the plane. It was nighttime when we were coming into the city, and he had announced that I was on the plane. And the people were all wearing cowboy hats and everything else on the plane. It looked like some Beverly Hillbilly stuff, man. It was wild. And we were coming in, and we all looked out the left window side of the plane. Dude, I've never seen anything like this in my life. And you talk about feeling humble. All the skyscrapers had the office lights turned on, spelling cowboy up down the side of all the skyscrapers downtown Boston. And that's when you know you're nothing. You're part of something amazing. And the people are what's amazing. And that's the magic. And, you know, I got to go there and I walked out on the mound with a guitar hanging on my back, just me and a black guitar. And I went out there and I rocked out Cowboy Up to 55,000 of my closest friends. And they were singing the chorus with me word for word, all 55,000. And my mom got sick. She was crying. She was smiling. She got to see it.
And then and for that time, she wasn't sick.
She was not sick. No, we were a family on vacation. We weren't a family fighting an awful, awful disease. We were a family on vacation, thanks to the Red Sox. Amazing people.
That's an amazing story.
I'm so glad she got to have that memory.
Yeah. Yeah. And we made some amazing ones, you know, and I'll tell you, I got to be her son. Mm-hmm. You know, I got to be of her in front of her. I mean, I can't think of anybody more lucky. So, you know, I feel sorry for you guys to not get to meet her. And she was amazing.
I'm hilarious. Sure she was. She was.
Sing.
So,
yep.
What happened to your mom? And you had some other issues, a lot of family stuff.
Yeah.
Miscarriage, if I'm reading correctly. A lot of things going on. So you had to walk away from the music business. How hard was that?
It wasn't. You know, I was at a point where there was no way you could be any kind of best version of yourself when your soul is getting cracked on a daily basis. 28 people in 14 years, like you mentioned, the miscarriage was on Mother's Day of all days. I was pretty sure that God hated me. And to be perfectly honest, I wanted a piece of him too. You know, we weren't on speaking terms for a long time. And I had to go try to find that meaning of life kind of thing.
Right.
And what family I had left, I had to go hold them together. And when I did that, I went back to where I started. I went and tried to find who I used to be. I had the benefit of what I'd learned on the travels, but I wanted to go back and find who I used to be.
Right.
And a roundabout way I did. And I ended up taking a job in the oil field and getting back with all the guys that I grew up with, you know.
Right.
And I tore everything down to the bones. And for the first time in my life and forever, I wasn't associated with music. And the people who started to meet me met me through my reputation that I had in the oil and gas industry that was well respected. Very quickly, I caught up real quick. And all those people met that. My friends, where I've done a lot side by side with the military. I love our military, armed service members.
Sure.
And a lot of those people had come back into my life in different capacities. Right. And even in the construction side, I pivoted over and did that. So whatever I did it as a real world civilian.
A hardworking guy. These are not easy jobs.
Yep. And I quit worrying about where I wanted to be or how I needed to get there. My goal every day was to be of maximum service. Mm-hmm. And I started doing that in every aspect of my life, at home, with my family, with my friends, with my companies, whoever I worked for, I'd be of maximum service.
So in the meantime, while this is happening, the experiments mixing and mashing country with hip hop and rock that you were doing with Abel Kane, Big and Rich and other people were doing the same thing, and then they were blowing up. And
yeah,
now
Big and Rich actually had it, I'd say Kid Rock first, and then Big and Rich, and they didn't get it from us. That's completely unique. John Rich is brilliant, so's Kenny. And both of them, they had their own vibe, their own thing. They got it. They understood it. They took off.
Well, I remember they were the first ones I saw that, like, well, I know Kid Rock was a rapper that kind of transitioned to country, but I remember I stumbled over like a country award show and saw like Big and Rich, and it was like a rave, and there's like a rapper and a DJ. I'm like, what is this? Is this country music? Yeah. I don't know. And I have friends that like country music, and there's a whole schism because there's a whole group of people that like that, and there's a whole group of people that hate that. They want their country to be country, and you know, and then there's bro country that mixes the rock. If Randy Travis started today, would he get a record deal?
I don't think he would want a record deal, but if he came out today, I think he would be a monster. I think he would be a huge hit.
He was that talented.
He's that talented, but also it's that time in the cycle.
Okay.
See, everything's a cycle. There's always going to be spinoffs and inventions or reinventions, and that's the repackaging of the old music, giving it new life. There's so much cool stuff happening with Jelly Roll right now. Mm-hmm. The Morgan Wallen, I mean, right. That kid has done phenomenal, but the work ethic is there. I mean, what did he do? He released like 36 songs or something all at once. Right. That's what somebody was telling. I get that. And that's somebody that understands that we're not here to tell you how to vote. We're not here to tell you how to live. We're here to entertain you. We're here as writers, if we do our job to the best of our ability, then I might have the honor of being a small piece of the soundtrack to your favorite memories as a writer, as right. an artist. You know, that's it. When you buy a piece, when you buy a song, stream it or download something, you are investing in me. You're not a fan. That's dumb. Right. You're right. An investor. You're a shareholder.
Well, you right? say that. You say that, but try that in a small town. I mean, that, and I've never heard the song. Nicole said she heard the song, and she said, you know, there's
I didn't
nothing
hear the song. I read the lyrics.
Oh, you read the lyrics, and you're like, I don't get the big deal. But the big deal is it's intensely provoking. These days, a lot of artists is what other people bring to it.
It's not the actual message of the song. I so disagree. I think these people coming out trying to false label it. Mm-hmm. I mean, dude, let's be honest. We've had fake news since Iceland and Greenland.
Sure.
Okay. It's not a new concept. They've been lying to us for a long time. And they picked this song. Somebody got so offended over this one song.
Or the record company paid somebody to post that they were so offended.
It might be, bro, but it took off like wildfire because people are tired of being force-fed an agenda. I mean, everybody's just sick of it. We're just sick of it. Everybody's trying to work and make a living and actually do their job, and they're sick of politicians who are not doing theirs on both sides.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And people are just fed up. If it's not going to work right, they're ready to burn it down. That's really where everybody's at. And so the people will rally behind something that gets deemed as offensive, right? And that's what happened. This is not an offensive song. This is very truthful. I just drove here, you know, from Louisiana over to Houston, and I went through a bunch of those towns, and these people look after each other. The old man goes down, so one of the neighbors comes and mows his yard for him. I mean, you know, they look after each other. And you come in and you rob somebody, you come in and try to hurt somebody, and you're going to hear a large collection of across the board.
Sure.
And that's not just the house that you might be intruding on. That's going to be all the houses around it that heard the ruckus.
Right.
Right. And that's what they're saying. Man. We have to take care of each other, and we do in small towns.
Right. Well, I mean, but the thing is, and here's my whole thing with the song, and I haven't heard it once again. And I'm just, it's just, and this is a lot of art these days, is that it's not the art itself, it's the interpretations. And everybody's a critic, everybody's got their own opinion. The reason I haven't heard the song, I probably won't, I'm sure I'll hear it at some point, but I'm loath to hear it because I've heard all this crap on my Facebook page of this and that and the other thing. I can't appreciate the song for what it is anyway, because I'm just hearing all this stuff on both sides, and it's ridiculous. And to me, it seems manufactured. It really seems like, and it seems to be working because it's the number one song in the country.
Well, what happened right after that is CMT. This is another. In the music business, you got all these people who are making a living off of rural America. Well, pretty much anybody that loves the art form. But a lot of what is represented in the art form is rural America. And you have these people who aren't, and it's okay, they're not aligned with red blood America. Okay, in the industry, they don't agree with any of the philosophies. They don't believe in any of the politics. They maybe even make jokes about them in many cases. I saw a cartoon that was very disheartening for me because somebody that I really admired, who had made a fortune in the country music industry, had this old cartoon. It was like one of those little newspaper cartoons, and it had this pot-bellied caricature up there with stick arms and stick legs and a big floppy cowboy hat and pot belly sticking out. And the caricature was saying, "Thank you, all these redneck something, for making me richer than God." But the way that the cartoon was kind of communicating it was that all the people who liked country music were stupid. And right. The person who was making the money off of them, the artist, the singer, you know, was taking advantage of them, and he didn't really respect them. And they thought that was funny, and they put that up at a publishing company where I was at. And to really? Me, yeah, and that's for me. And for me, that's like, if you don't appreciate these people, you know, there's a lot of stuff I want to say right now. I don't know what I could say.
But, you can say anything. Go ahead. We encourage profanity.
Well, I do. That kind of shit pisses me off, bro.
There we go.
It's like, you know, I'm straight. You either saltwater or freshwater, baby. You pick which side you're going to be on and then ride it and stick to it. You know, have some integrity, you know, sure. And you're dealing with people that don't have it. And so the industry is infiltrated with those people. And so and we call it woke, which is kind of a joke. I mean, if you truly woke, you appreciate everybody's views, because there were people like me when the world was more conservative. People like me were pushing on other folks to, hey, let's be more accepting. Mm-hmm. Let's be more accepting. I'm not fit to judge anybody.
Right.
So, you know, I'm not going to judge them. Well, now once these folks got some traction underneath them, now they're flipping the script and the persecutors are becoming the oppressors, right?
Right.
And so they're force feeding everybody. I ain't got time for that dumb shit. I ain't going to put up with it. And they, you know, CMT just decided that they were going to censor. The ones who are always talking about acceptance are the ones who always want to censor everybody. And they were wanting to censor. They're wanting to pull, you know, try that in a small town off of CMT. Well, that ain't the CMT that I used to spin on, right? Because they didn't pull shit like this. Hank Williams Jr., who's on the board of directors, he abdicated his seat, resigned from the board when they pulled that shit. And then all these other country singers went in and pulled their videos off the CMT. If they're gonna have any content to spin on CMT, it's gonna be Sham Wow and Mighty Putty. They ain't gonna have anything else to put on there.
Right. Well, that's good. You don't have to like it, but you have to respect it, and it needs to be heard. So that's up to you. It's up to you what you like, what you don't like. I mean, that's anything. Because some people would actually, and this is what I'm asking, and this is what I'm wondering, because I love your new music, but say like I see you reaching beyond the country market. I see you with especially the song About Us is like a Benetton ad. Have you been accused of being woke?
No, for me, I'm not woke, but I'm awake.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a difference. People ask me what kind of music, and I say, I make American music. Mm-hmm. And they'll say, well, is it country? And I'll say, what country? And they'll say, you know, with a fiddle. And I say, oh, from Italy.
Right.
No, with a banjo. Oh, you mean from Africa? Because that's where those instruments came from.
Sure.
And so I want to take all the instruments that came from every other corner of the world, came to the United States, our cultures, all of our collection and hodgepodge of cultures and melting pot created all these different musical styles. Mm-hmm. I love them all. And right. I want to incorporate as many of them as I can all together. And then as we move, I want to send that music all the corners of the world. I'm not just doing everything just for, you know, the United States. My brothers and sisters in Canada, all mis hermanos Latinos down south of the border.
Right.
You know,
well, I was going to get to that because I've been listening to your music. One About Us, or a song about us, I'm sorry. Song About Us predominantly features bagpipes. And I'm part Scottish, and I love bagpipes. I love when they throw bagpipes in the song. I don't know, did you ever hear a song in the 90s called Dream by Force from the Trees?
It was, I have to hear the melody.
You might have heard it. I mean, it's long forgotten. This guy, you remember that, Nicole? This is a long time ago. This guy used to write with Beck, and he did a song. And he wrote an album. His group was called Force from the Trees. I'll send you a link. But
I love it.
He recorded an album. He wrote on Beck's first album. He was like his co-writer. Then he did his own album, and then he went literally insane, and was committed to an insane asylum. And his family put out the album to help pay for his medical costs. And this became a semi-hit on alternative radio, but it had bagpipes, it had rapping, it had sitars, it just had everything. Reminds me a little bit of your music, because you have bagpipes in that song. Sicario is a very Latin beat. You have scratching, you have hip-hop beats, you got trap beats.
I have a sitar.
You have a sitar.
On the intro to New West, I got a Sintra.
That's right. That's right. Because I listened to that. Because Nicole's going to Vegas this weekend. Now, tell us the inspiration of True Rest, which is the title track of your latest album.
Yep. It is straight up. I was coming out of Alberta, Canada. And that was their slogan up there, as Welcome to the New West. And I thought that was so cool. I love that phrase. And then I got off the plane in Las Vegas, and that's when it really hit me. Welcome to the New West, right? So I'm from Alberta to Vegas, and I had some stuff we were doing there. And, you know, that is the modern city of sin. It's Sodom and Gomorrah and Mecca. And
why do you think Nicole's going there?
Yeah, of course. And it's a new Babylon, right? You know, and you have every walk of life out there in the American Southwest.
Right.
I mean, it was created by the mobsters and crooked politicians. I mean, come on.
Yeah. Right.
And so it's super cool. I wanted to, basically what I saw was what I wrote.
Right.
You know, and if everybody in the middle of the burning desert, you'll find the city of sin. Lady Luck has her arms wide open. Take her by the hand and give her a spin. Underneath that Vegas moon, they're playing Texas Hold'em. Check them out across the room. They got the mojo working and the dice are rolling. That's going to be Nicole slinging dice.
I think so. I think that's going to be Nicole. Now, man, we could talk to you all night, but let me get a couple things out and then we'll let you go. But tell us how Billy Ray Cyrus helped you come back.
He's a really cool guy, great guy.
Who, if people don't know, I don't know how you don't know him. He's spanned generations. You got Achy Breaky Heart, you got Miley Cyrus's dad, and you got Lil Nas X. He just had a big comeback.
Yeah. Yeah, he's rock solid. He's Kentucky's finest. And, you know, it was just, I was actually working, doing construction, and I'd gotten a call from my accountant, and he hit me up. He said, hey, boss, I was just going to holler at you because I had Billy Ray in, and we were listening to some of your old stuff, and he wanted you to get in touch with him. I think he might be interested in technical. So I called him up, hit him up. I think we were texting originally back and forth because he was doing Zoom calls and all kind of other stuff.
Sure.
Anyhow, we were talking, and I told him I don't write it. I don't do anything. I shut it all down. I did nothing for 15 years. Nada. Zero. Nothing.
Right.
And he was saying, I love this one song. I would like to go in and... what are the lines? What substitute lines can we come up with here or here? I don't write anymore. That part of my brain's turned off. But I stared at it long enough and he tricked me. And when I did, I started working out the lines in my head. And when I did, it woke up that damn spot in my brain. And all these crazy lines started coming out that had color to them. It was kind of like the old saying, you have a Sears Roebuck chorus but you got Michelangelo verses, right? So
right.
You're going to have a general chorus that everybody can sing along to, but then the verses are going to have all this cool imagery and funny things and color to it and all this.
Sure.
And so I was looking for this line in this song, and it was about a stripper originally, and he was wanting me to do a little changing to it. And I was sitting there talking about the bartender and the girl up there doing her thing. And it just flew out of her mouth. She's twerking with a twang. And we both, I laughed about it. He laughed about it. And then I said, oh, dude, that's a song, man. That's not a replacement line. That's a whole damn song.
Sure.
And he said, I think so. And I said, let me get back to you. And that spot had woke up. I didn't have a choice at that point. It'd been asleep for a decade and a half. And like 4 hours later, it was dead. It was just done. Just boom. And I played it for him. He freaked out. He even was pitching it to Snoop Dogg. They were all listening to it. Because he was doing that project with Snoop at the time. And Snoop's people loved it. They thought it was crazy. They all loved it. And then the part that I wasn't expecting was Billy started to push on me to release it. And I said, dude, I'm like, I don't do that for a living anymore, man. I'm just a Joe's Blow. Nobody wants to see this old guy. Nobody wants to hear me singing and cutting up and stuff. You know, I'm like your old uncle now, right? And so.
Well, he's about the same age, right? Maybe older.
Yeah, but the difference is he never backed away from it. So he stayed in the, you know, as an institution. He is an institution.
And so is Snoop, for that matter.
Same deal.
Yeah.
But you don't come back. I didn't think you did. I didn't think you would come back because I was pretty sure with the internet and everything else the way, because I never even had social media. So I thought if I come back, these kids aren't going to be into what I'm doing. And then he kept pushing and kept pushing. And my wife and daughter had been asking me for about 4 years to start writing again, but I wasn't compelled to do it in any way. And a combination of between him, my wife and daughter, and then some other old music friends coming together with me that I hadn't talked to in probably 4 or 5 years. All of that happened in like the same week. And then it just happened.
And then so far in 2023, you've not come out with one album, but two albums.
Yes, sir.
Voices in My Head and New West.
Yes, sir. And it was because we put out Voices in My Head, and all these people were really receiving it very well. And then I heard the worst thing that somebody could ever say to me. That's, you know, he's been out for a while. That's probably all he's got. It's never all I got. I don't care how much, it's never all I got. So I just turned right around and we slung out Brian Austin, Grammy nominee, guitar player, beast, and a dear friend of mine, former roommate of mine, back when he had his record deal on Liberty Records. He owns the studio, and we just went in and did this like Starsky and Hutch, man. We rolled up on this and started mapping this thing out together, two old guys, two old friends of 30 plus years, and then bringing in all of our other friends.
Right.
What advice do you give to other artists that are either wanting to have a comeback or they would like to like start fresh? What advice do you have for them?
You were born to be epic. And me, I stepped away because after losing all the family and everyone and the challenges that I had in the business and fighting against the current, I didn't see the point. I saw after countless funerals, I was like, we are so temporary. There's just no point to this. This is crazy. And then it took 15 years of me getting away. It took my amazing wife never faltering in her belief in me, the other people all around me that I've known for years, my amazing 13-year-old daughter who believes in her daddy no matter what. they reminded me that we are very temporary, and that's exactly the point. It's because we're only here for a nanosecond. We're born to be epic. There is no reason to not take your shot. No reason to not step up and swing for the Reaper every time.
Go at it hard. Keep swinging, Nud.
Keep swinging nonstop. And that's exactly the point. Because you old, artists that are my age, what would I tell them? I would ask them a simple question. Why not? Why the fuck not? That's the question. You tell me that. Why not?
And you're reaching across generations because Instagram influencers are remixing your songs. A lot of rappers are working with you. And you got, I don't know who the Spider-Man guy is, but there's some Spider-Man guy that does these dance videos for you.
Yeah, he reached out. He's a social media influencer. Now, keep in mind, guys, y'all, please be gentle on me. I didn't have social media till like March or April, and that's when I first started these pages. My daughter created the YouTube channel. I had nothing, and so I didn't even know what the rules were. I didn't even know how you say hi to people, right? And so we started these pages, and I started uploading the music. And to our earlier topic or point, these people from all around the world were reaching out, that they were loving what we did, especially all these guys in Africa. I had no idea they loved country music, and they loved the Southern rock stuff and the Delta blues stuff that we were doing and all
in Africa. They love country music in Africa.
Oh my God. And this kid, he and his posse, his crew, they all dress up like Marvel characters and do all these dance routines. It's like a whole thing. And I was shocked. And the kid was sending me all these really cool messages, really nice, super sweet kid. And Icy Spider is his Instagram. Icy Spider, super, super cool kid, very respectful. All of his group are, all of them. And the group kept growing. Every time he would send me another video of them, he had them all dancing to Twerking with a Twang. Then they were all dancing to Sexy Freakalicious. Then they were all dancing to My Mama's People. And then the next one, they were dancing to Song About Us. You know, all just right. And the group just kept growing. Each time he'd send another video, it was more kids. And so you have that. You have people from Spain and Italy. I've got people from all over the UK, you know, sending stuff. And it's just super cool. And then people from right here in the States, you know, East Coast, West Coast. But yeah, it's been really amazing. The people around the world that have sent me messages about they love the music. They love it.
That's great. So, I got to have your daughter do my social media. You've already surpassed me.
Yeah, I believe that a rising tide lifts all boats.
Sure.
People say that kind of stuff, but they don't really mean it. And that's unfortunate. I really do.
No, and I can't.
I want everything with you guys. I want to post your stuff all over my page. You know, if somebody gets to be introduced to you and you grow fans, supporters, that's great. You know, you've got a lot to give people. You guys are great. You do great content, and people have an opportunity to be able to find you and support you, and then vice versa. You know, you right. continue to grow. I want to meet anybody who's up for the introduction.
So bottom line is, 20 years ago, you thought you were on your way and you had some success. You the good thing about what happened 20 years ago is you knew you had the talent and you proved that you had the talent. And now, even though people would say, well, geez, you're 50 years old, social media's caught up with you, and now you're all over the world.
That's what it kind of feels like now. It's real crazy. Yeah.
And it's happening. And, you know, I'm glad that the word is getting to Africa and to Spain to not yes. cook bacon naked. So I yes. want to make sure that people realize that worldwide. I love your stuff. I think you're great. I had a great time. We just, as I said, we barely scratched the surface. We're going to have you back. I hope to see you live very soon. And I hope great success. I could see the top three songs are country songs, I could see Song About Us going right there.
I write everything for the listeners, not for the money. I write it for the listeners. I wasn't hearing it on the radio. I wasn't hearing it anywhere. Yeah. And actual Song About Us is something, that song's over 20 years old. I wrote that a long time ago. And so what ended up happening now is I had the idea. I asked everyone to submit me their clips because it's not called a song about me. It's called a song about us.
Well, and so on the video, yeah,
all those people, that's why all those people from all around the world, the horseback in boats on mountaintops, mm-hmm. you know, every corner, people were sending all these videos, really cool clips, and so a bunch of influencers and musicians from the studio were sending in, you know, clips. And my favorite part about all this, Bud, is we're doing it together.
That's
my favorite part.
Thank you for bringing us your Southern Hospitality. I thought it was a great show. I can't say enough. And tell everybody how they can get a hold of you and how they can listen to your music.
Spotify, Uncle Rhino, R-Y-A-N-O, Uncle Rhino. On Spotify, Instagram, I'm on Deezer, Tidal,
YouTube. You're on Apple Music, all of that stuff.
Yeah, every streaming platform. And UncleRhino.com is the website. UncleRhino.com.
UncleRhino.com. And Nicole, I know it looks like Troubles needs you in a second, so you might want to do your plugs quick.
So I'm Nicole Six Books and on Instagram and Nicole H Six on Facebook. And, there's a link to my current novel or my current poetry book, Slow Burn, in my bio.
Yes. Go get Slow Burn at lulu.com. And I was goth comedian on all social media, but somebody hacked my Facebook. So I have a new Facebook. Look for Dark Mark 2.0. And I'm still goth comedian on every other social media. And everybody have a wonderfully creepy week. Bye.